But in that Velázquez painting, there is a skull in the painting.
You mean in the ambassadors?
In the ambassadors, there's the skull. Yes. And that's an example of the distortion. All of a sudden you look and you see, and you have to look from an angle to see this skull. So talk about that as an example of distortion.
Yeah, and there you have another example. You have these two ambassadors that represent the stable worldview of knowledge, because they have the instruments of knowledge behind them, of mathematics, arithmetics, music. And then in front of them, you have this illegible skull that you only realize is a skull from a very short-sighted perspective. And you have both perspectives when you look at it from the front. It's either a monster in front of knowledge, which is actually the monster of death. No, the vanitas, the skull of representing death. So you have death, complete lack of meaning, threatening knowledge, threatening meaning. But if you look at it from the other side, you have knowledge as death, because you cannot realize, suddenly it becomes illegible, and what you see is death as meaningful. So there is no perspective that would decide which point of view is the correct one. Mm-hmm. We live, that's our destiny. We live in between the possibility of meaning and our destiny as meaninglessness.
And being over. the temporary nature of it.
Yeah.
Some people would say, well, he was doing a little trick so people coming up the stairs could get a different view.
Yeah, well, maybe. Maybe it's not that deep after all.
That's the answer to every question. Maybe.
Maybe. Yes.
Though not listed as a distortion, you use the phrase a renewed and cheerful nihilism to describe one aspect of Borges, the Argentine novelist, and say that that predated postmodernism or would later define an aspect of postmodernism. A renewed and cheerful nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
You get a look in your eye of almost a cheerfulness when
I do understand what I'm talking about.
Well, no, that you're excited to talk about something, which, you know, when you bring up the word nihilism, it's like, wait a second.
I'm
nothing
excited
to live for. This is all going to hell.
But why suffer it? I enjoy death. Why suffer the fact that we are in the midst of meaninglessness? It's a matter of temperament. Do you cry because there is no meaning, or do you enjoy the fact that there is no meaning? And this is one of the reasons I added the chapter on Borges and neo-baroque, because most people wouldn't understand or consider Borges as a baroque or neo-baroque writer. Most people think of him as mostly in terms of English essayistic style, very clear. But in fact, Borges is also toying around with the fundamental categories of experience, with time, with space, and
pure existentialism.
Yes, but in a sense, what Borges is doing is the same as the ambassadors is doing, bringing us to a point where we cannot decide where do we actually stand. There is a beautiful story by Borges on the exactitude in science, which is also very similar to the ambassadors. This is the story of an empire that its cartographers reach such level of expertise and perfection that they created maps that were so perfect that they coincided point by point with the geography. And at the end of the story, that map didn't make any sense. It was somehow the end of cartography. So pieces of this map eventually just went blowing with the wind. And this is a typical Borges story, where you have the hope and the utopia of complete knowledge, of hyper-realistic knowledge, with the contrast of the impossibility of knowledge. And it is in that no man's land that I find this cheerful nihilism.
Even if you get there and it's perfect, it falls apart.
It falls apart. And you keep building, and it keeps crumbling down, and you keep building, and it keeps crumbling down. And that's what I understand as neo-baroque.
Uh-huh.